Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Now let's go down and talk with Tommy McCarthy. Tommy, great to have you back. How you been?
I'm doing great. Back here in the Philadelphia area, getting ready for a little basketball, and it's a little chillier here than it was in Clearwater, Steve.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, by a wide margin, as a matter of fact. Wide margin. First of all, great job in Dayton with Lav and with Avery Johnson and John Rothstein. What was it like being in that atmosphere in Dayton, which is a great place to hold the first four anyway, but having fans back, what kind of impact did you think that had on the first four?
Overwhelming, I think. Sold out both nights and just a tremendous, as you said, tremendous venue. You know, I always tell people that I invite them, if they're big basketball fans or even football fans or baseball fans, but basketball fans, I invite them to, I say you have to go to the Palestra, you've got to go to Allen Fieldhouse. If you can get to Cameron Indoor Stadium, great. But I'm telling you, Dayton is a fantastic place to watch college basketball. And the energy in that building for both nights was It was very refreshing from a college basketball standpoint, and really I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. It was just so great to be part of it.
And you know, I know they've redone areas of the arena since, but I did an NIT game there in '98. They had 11,000 people there for an NIT game in '98. Yeah. Like, you got to be kidding me! This is remarkable. They just really embrace it. What was the general impression you got out of the first four? Because like a team like Notre Dame gets out of there, and they advance at least around. Indiana got out of there as well. What did you think about the caliber of competition?
Well, I thought there were definitively three teams there. I should say four teams because I'll count Wyoming too. I think all four teams could have easily gone to the regular part of the tournament and won two games. I mean, I know Notre Dame, you know, won two overall and won their first round game after winning in Dayton. But high quality basketball. That Rutgers team, I'm not telling you, Steve, that you don't know anything because you saw them. That Rutgers team is a heck of a team. I mean, that just was a tough matchup for them. It was an entertaining game, and listen, I mean, they would have been tough for anybody if they got to the first rounds.
Right, exactly right. I have to ask you about the foul ball. Tommy McCarthy gets right in the chest, and guess what? Doesn't skip a beat.
So we were having internet problems in the booth at that particular for about an inning or so, and we were talking about the CBA, and there was an article that I had sent myself earlier in the day that was on my computer, but I couldn't, for some reason, I thought I had stored it as a regular file, but I didn't, so I couldn't call it up because there was no internet service. So I had it on my phone. I knew I had it on my phone. So we were talking about it, and I just looked down right before the pitch to Haseley, and I mean, it was, I really didn't even feel it. It was funny. I don't know if it's because it hit the wire first, but I didn't even feel it, and it was it's one of those things. We make fun of people all the time for being on their phones and not paying attention. Well, we've got to kind of listen to our own lecturing when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Later, number one, did it leave a mark?
It didn't, but I still have the ball.
Okay, and number two, did you feel it later?
No, well, you know, it's funny. My son was with me. My son Tommy, who still plays professional baseball.
Sure.
He's in the independent leagues. We were back at the hotel that night, and I said, you know, it's weird. I do feel it a little bit in my shoulder, but that was it for maybe that night. And I woke up the next day. I was totally fine. So I really didn't feel it at all, and I think I'm lucky that it wasn't 2 or 3 inches higher.
Yeah. All right, can we talk about the team for a moment? Because it's interesting. They bring in Nick Castellanos. They bring in Kyle Schwarber. Now, neither one of them is a great defensive player, but both of them provide, at moments, some outstanding offense. So what do they do to the balance of the Phillies lineup on an everyday basis?
Well, I think they give Joe a chance to have power right, left, throughout the lineup. And I felt like we needed at least one more bat. And the fact that they got two is huge. I'm still a little concerned about the pitching, but I think that you have two guys that could. I mean, Castellanos did it last year. He drove in 100 runs. But you have two guys that have the ability to drive in 100 runs. And to me, that's a big deal in this lineup. I mean, even Schwarber is a leadoff hitter, and I think he will be the leadoff hitter. You know, he can pop it out of the ballpark to start the game, and that's pretty refreshing to have that ability. You know, I don't know. One of them is going to have to DH. Even though Castellanos right. joked during the press conference, although he didn't really joke too much in the press conference, he was a really serious dude. he still takes ground. Wasn't he serious? Steve, it was like one day we had Schwarber, who was happy-go-lucky, intense, you know, funny. And then
Schwarber's the life of the party in the clubhouse. Castellanos is not.
No, I wasn't expecting it, but I think Joe said it yesterday on the telecast. He answered like seven or eight questions with a question. Are you an intense ball player? I mean, it just seems like you're an intense ball player. Well, do I look like I'm an intense ball player? Yes, you do.
Oh my goodness! What role do you? You mentioned that you referenced the DH. What kind of comfort level do the Phillies have in these two signings because of the DH?
Yeah, I think big time. I think that's the key. If the pitcher was still hitting, I don't know if they would have gone after both Schwarber and Castellanos. I think they would have gone after Chris Bryant and one of them, if that makes any sense, because the other would play left field. I think the DH really—it's the reason that they were comfortable with going to get both of these guys, because I do think you're going to see Joe swap out the DH position an awful lot. You know, there could be 20 games where Harper DHs. There could be 20 games where Schwarber DHs. There could be 20 games where Hoskins DHs. You know, that type of thing. And I think he's going to use it to get guys off their feet to a certain extent. But I think Castellanos will do it more often than that, but I think that they'll swap it back and forth.
All right. So what's your feeling about it? You had the 2020 season had the DH. It was one of those necessary situations. Last season did not. Everyone knew it was coming. Is it an adjustment for you as a fan of baseball, or were you in favor of it anyway?
I was never in favor of it until I felt last year pitchers just weren't, I don't want to say weren't trying, but really weren't trying. So to me, I sort of gave in. I'm a big believer in the, and I'm not one of those guys that says that baseball needs to be played the way it was played in the 70s and 80s, but I was a big believer that the National League and the American League should be different when it came to the DH. I would have preferred the pitcher hitting. But last year, I think I kind of wavered a little bit, because the only guy that really put together any kind of justifiable at-bats for the Phillies was Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. Everybody else just kind of went through the motions. So I was like, you know what, if they're not going to try, let's get somebody else in there that's going to put some numbers up there. So I am okay with it. Best case scenario would be that the pitcher hit, but I think our game, I need to evolve with our game. That's one of the goals I even had for myself this year, was to start evolving more with the game and embracing the greatness of the game and not being as critical of the game as maybe my mind had me being over the last several years.
Very fair. What does this shortened spring training mean to ramping up pitchers where they're fully stretched out to actually give what you would perceive to be for that particular individual a normal outing?
That's a really good question. You know, I think the one part of the game that still does bother me and would allow me, I would like to get on my soapbox a little bit, is I don't think starters go deep enough into games.
I agree.
And I think that's what's cost our game to a certain extent. So I'm hoping that the DH will allow guys to go deeper into games.
Agreed.
And I also think that we as an organization may be trying to figure out how to build up more durability in the lower levels to have guys ready to go deeper into games at the higher levels.
I've got to now ask you about being in Philadelphia for basketball. That is one of the more intriguing brackets across the board. Because just so everybody knows, the attendance for the last St. Peter's game at home was 577.
Yeah. Was 577. Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. So let's not pretend, they sell out every game and there's this wave of emotion. There's a lot of people
they're going to all of a sudden bring 10,000 people with them.
Right. There's a lot of people that sprained ankles jumping on that bandwagon in the last 10 days.
Right, exactly. Yeah, my family, my brothers and my other family being part of that, because I was born in Jersey City. My dad went to St. Peter's games when he was younger. You know, it was less than a mile from his house where he grew up, all this stuff. I still have a ton of family up there. And my brother posted something on social media about JC in the house, Jersey City in the house. And I said, you cannot jump on this bandwagon right now. I think it's cool. You know, we talked to Shaheen Holloway today for our pregame show. And really humbled and, you know, understands the magnitude because he played in the NCAA tournament. It's a great story. I don't think another chapter is going to be written against Purdue. I mean, you know how good Purdue is.
Yeah.
Although, I did North Texas Purdue last year.
And North Texas won.
And Matt Painter reminded me of that today. North Texas won. So... Yeah. Who knows?
Yet the other half of the bracket's fun. So, I mean, that's what makes this intriguing. The other half of the bracket, one has David Goliath. The other bracket, half of the bracket, is really intriguing.
It's intriguing because of the lineage, the history.
Yes.
But I also think the styles, if everybody's healthy... North Carolina's playing at a high level right now. The Manic kid, the transfer from Oklahoma's been in a different world shooting the basketball.
Yeah.
Jaime Jaquez, whether he's healthy or not, that's a big deal for UCLA. That's going to be a big deal. His ankle, I was at practice today, he did do a little bit. He didn't do a whole lot. It's going to be a really cool matchup. I wish it wasn't at 9:40 at night. I wish it was earlier. For everybody to get a chance to watch. You know, I know it's Friday night, so people are up a little later, but I think it's one of the better games to kick off Sweet 16. I know there's games tonight, but I think it's one of the better games, theater-wise, that the NCAA has left.
When you talk to Hubert Davis, he does not play the way that Roy Williams played. He had to incorporate a new style. How long did it feel to him that it took for his team to adapt to how he wanted to play the game as opposed to the way Roy played it forever?
Great question. The last month, he said, they've adapted and have come together. You know, coaches, this year I think I've heard this more than any other year, connectivity. He feels like they're connected. You know, they have the two transfers. He said it took them time to get used to Carolina basketball. He has the freshmen that are playing... but he said it took time for those freshmen to get used to it. They had high expectations. They were ranked 19th preseason, and then they faltered.
Yeah.
And they were a bubble team for a good part of the year. But I think the last month, he said today, he feels like they are connected more and more. And he admitted that he doesn't play the same style that Roy Williams played, even though he was on Roy's coaching staff. But he said he's adapted to the players, that's why, more than anything else.
And then as for UCLA, I mean, he barely made it back to the bench and did not put his sneaker back on in the game that they played. But this is a team that took this road from the first four, ironically, and got to the national championship last year. Is anything, when you talk to the UCLA people, Do they, you know, they understand the pressure of it, but if they don't make it there, is it a failure for them because of where they were last year?
It may be a little bit. You know, if Jaquez isn't going to play, it's going to be really hard for them to get past North Carolina. But I
agreed.
I think their expectation is because of their veteran status and their understanding of Mick Cronin's offense and the way he wants them to play defense more than anything else. I think it would be a disappointment if they don't get back to the Final Four. I really do.
Well, I'll say this. You dealt with four great coaches to talk to. Mick is great to talk to. I mean, you know, Matt Painter is great.
Yeah, we took a photo, too, because people think that we're brothers from another mother. So I said it has to do with the hairstyle more than anything else because I'm about 8 feet taller than he is. So.
Very true. Hey, Tommy, thanks a lot for the time. I really appreciate it. Hey, what team might your son sign with this year independently?
Yeah, so I think he'd still like to go back to Gary in the American Association, but
okay.
We'll see. I mean, he's talked to a bunch of other teams. I think he wants to give it one more shot to play. You know, he's 24. He's coaching his college team right now. He's the assistant coach. And, you know, he's finishing up his master's. And, you know, we told both of our boys and even our daughters, you know, particularly from a baseball standpoint for him, play until it's out of your system because we don't want down the road for you to say, ah, shucks, I should have played two more years.
Good for you.
As long as he's productive, and he is, he's getting his master's and he's coaching, then I think that, you know, I would have played until I was 50. So if he's got way better skills than anybody in my family has, so I would like him to keep playing.
That's great, Tommy. That's great advice, too. That's why, you know, it's interesting. In my broadcasting class, I tell them, I said, look, don't be at 35, I pick as a number, and have regrets you didn't try it.
Yeah.
Don't have regrets. You know?
Nope, so. I agree. The canvas can always be repainted, but it has to be on your terms and not somebody else's terms. And that's what I always tell my kids.
Well put, Tommy. Well put. Hey, have a great time with this. Can't wait for the baseball season as well. And thanks for your time today, my friend.
You got it. Anytime.